Split show for you tonight. So we've got Matthew Barrett Gross here talking about the last myth with your phone calls this hour. And it'll be the last hour with him. So make the call and we'll be right back. And welcome back to Coast. Matthew Barrett Gross with us as we talk about apocalyptic times. We'll take your calls as well. Matthew, so in terms of the apocalypse, you don't seem concerned. You don't seem worried. I guess that's a healthy thing, isn't it?
Well, it is, and it's interesting, and that really is a result of writing this book, The Last Myth, and spending years thinking about this. I mean, both my wife, Mel, and I, who's the co-author of the book, we started off very apocalyptically and very nervous and concerned about the future and what the future holds and all of the challenges and potential threats facing us. And as we wrote the book, we started to put things into a bit more perspective. And what we found is a bit what I was alluding towards before the break, which was there are some things that we can prepare for, and those things we should prepare for. But there are some things that no amount of preparation will make a difference. An asteroid hitting the Earth, there's really nothing we can do about it. So there's really not a whole lot that... not very much good served from worrying about it. And then there are other things that we feel that we can address, and we can address as a culture and as individuals. And as you start to embrace that, not just preparation, but change and sort of the acceptance of the precariousness in which our society finds ourselves, and we find ourselves just on this planet, in this universe. You know, we are in a very precarious situation, and that's part of the human condition. And I think as you explore and examine what gives rise to these apocalyptic anxieties, some of our fears, and which are real, which are ones that we should be concerned about, and which are fed to us by the media or inflamed by the media, and which are backed up by science and which are not, I think you do kind of find a sense of equanimity and a sense of peace without necessarily putting on rose-colored glasses and thinking everything's going to be okay and we're going to go back to how things were, because I certainly don't believe that. I think there are tremendous challenges ahead. But I found, certainly in writing the book and examining why I'm attracted to apocalyptic thinking and how it sometimes hinders me and when I think about and plan for the future, that there's a tremendous sense of liberation in that knowledge and a bit of hope.
Well, I think mankind may be the apocalypse all by itself, man.
Yeah.
You know, with the things that we do, the possibilities of destroying the planet, whether we're stupid or atomically, I really do. I think the apocalypse in this era is man.
I think you're absolutely right. And in fact, Carl Jung wrote quite a bit about this, and a number of influential thinkers from the 20th century became really obsessed with the apocalypse at the end of their lifetime of work. And part of what they were concerned about was this ability that we have as human beings through our scientific powers and prowess to really call into being the apocalypse. And they found, and they believed, people like Edward Edinger and Carl Jung and others, that we really have to be careful about how we think about the future, because we could call that and bring that into being. And, Carl Jung has this famous line about not nature, but the genius of mankind has now knotted the hangman's noose with which he can hang himself. And we are in that situation. And we do have the power to wipe ourselves out, and to wipe out most, if not all, of life on Earth, certainly through nuclear war. And I think that requires a greater wisdom as people and as individuals. It really presents us with a greater responsibility. As we argue in the book, having become like gods, we must become more godlike.
I have the live today as if it's your last day mentality. Is that smart?
I think it is smart. Because certainly one day you will be right.
I'm not reckless, but yeah. But that's the way I live.
Well, I think that is absolutely right. But I also think, you know, when we live today as if this might be our last day, part of that living within the moment and living within the present fully, which I think is a great way to live, also involves thinking about the future and our children and our grandchildren And, you know, as adults, we can't fully live just for today without thinking about what might we be leaving, you know, for our descendants.
Okay, let's go to the phones. We'll start with Brian, Minneapolis, Minnesota, east of the Rockies. Brian, you're on with us. Go ahead.
Thanks. I'd like to make two quick points. I'll try to make it quick here.
Sure.
One, the talk about Revelation. A lot of people don't realize that that was one of the books that was actually almost thrown out. There was four original cardinals there, whatever, that only one of them wanted to include it. Constantine basically overrode everybody else. One of the dangers I wanted to point out, secondly, the early church, I studied the Ante-Nicene church for a number of years, and the majority of those first 300-year Christians understood Revelation to be talking about the fall of Jerusalem in 70 AD, and that Nero was the 666 Antichrist. So this idea of the apocalypse, the current version, with Israel being reestablished, is a very new idea. It started with Darby in the 1800s. The danger is that it tends to be a self-fulfilling prophecy sometimes. The rhetoric, which a lot of people don't understand, is that, you know, Israel was the start of this, and this is, you know, something they pull out of different sources, kind of hodgepodge. But I guess the danger is that you know, you support this nation unilaterally and without any question, and the timeline's coming to an end. Back when this started in, you know, the late great planet Earth, and all these evangelicals that wrote about this basically had a timeline that it had to end within a period of one generation. And I heard just a week ago or two, Van Impe, which is one of the current last of the old-time evangelicals, trying to make the point that, you know, the last generation from the establishment of Israel is in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing all this. And the other thing is, Falwell was on 60 Minutes a number of years ago, and basically said that his idea of the apocalypse was that, yeah, they needed Israel, but in the end, two-thirds of the Jews are going to die, and another third was going to be converted. Well, if you're a Jew, you can now imagine what that sounds like. And if it doesn't happen, my fear is that people are going to make things happen to make it come to fruition, and that's the danger.
That is always something that I, too, thought about, Brian, that world leaders would, for example, get the book of Revelation and simply use it, Matthew, as a play guide.
And that's the danger. And Brian, you know, made a couple of great points. And he mentioned Hal Lindsey's The Late Great Planet Earth from the 1970s,
yep,
you know, which was extraordinarily influential. In fact, the New York Times called it the number one bestseller of the 1970s. And one of the things that we argue, and I think maybe Brian is alluding to, is, you know, there's a danger in calling into reality some of our beliefs. And I think we're in a particularly apocalyptic time now, as we discuss a bit in the book, is partially because a lot of those teens and 20-somethings from the 1970s who were clutching copies of Hal Lindsey's The Late Great Planet Earth are now in positions of political power, are now in positions as producers of television and radio news programs and you know, producing, and writers producing magazine articles and such. So, you know, all generations kind of grow up, seize the reins of power, and then kind of implement the beliefs from their youth. It's kind of just an example, as a quick example, the way we hear 80s alternative music now all over the mainstream, and we never heard it back in the 80s. Well, because those people grew up and now program music and such. And, you know, that is a danger. And I think that was one of the things that led us to write The Last Myth, as we mentioned at the very beginning, that sort of hand-wringing over how much influence do these evangelical Christians have over George W. Bush back in 2004 when he won re-election. And I think it's a constant problem that we return to many times. But Brian also mentioned a couple of things which we write about in The Last Myth, and it's the extraordinary way that the apocalypse as an idea has changed and over time, and how Revelations itself didn't enter the canon until about 400 or 500 AD.
Okay, we go now to New York, New York, and Nicholas is with us on the wild card line. Good morning.
Yes, Mr. Norrie, thank you very much for taking my call.
Okay.
Here's what I wanted to bring up to you and to your guest. Another guest you've had on, Joel Skousen, who has talked
yes.
about the possibility of, in a decade from now, of us being at war with Russia, China. I wanted to ask your guest about that, because do I think the world itself is going in with the planet blowing up or something like that? No. But I do think, however, and I think a lot of people would agree with me, that we are probably headed towards another major disaster or another world war within the next couple of years, to be honest with you. And I'd like your guest to please address that concept, because as your other guest, Mr. Scalzi, you've had on before, I've heard him, and what he says about this could very well happen, because it lists it in very, you know, logical, realistic steps. And I got to tell you, I think it's a possibility. I'd like your guest to please address that.
Matthew, we were talking about mankind being the apocalypse again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the question of is a major war likely or possible in the next few years? Will it happen? I certainly don't know. Is it possible? Yes. And is it more possible than at other times? I would argue quite vehemently, yes. You know, we are certainly in a place of tremendous financial instability with the euro and the crisis in Europe. And wars start when there's financial instability, right? The instability of currencies are nothing but expressions of a political construct and a global construct. And one of the sort of chain reactions that we can't foresee is, as the euro, if it does collapse, you know, what does that set in motion? And of course, you know, whether or not that leads the U.S. into a war with China and Russia, or if other, possibilities of other reasons lead to something like that, I couldn't say for certain. But I do believe that, you know, we are in a massively transitory time when it comes to global power and economic power. And those times of transition often lead to conflict.
Oh, they sure do. Big Island, Hawaii, we go. Frank, take it away. Hi.
Good evening, George.
Hey,
I hope
Frank.
I'm going to be able to... I have so much to say. I hope I can present at least one good point.
All right, go for it.
I'd like to come from a biblical standpoint and try to present a theory of mine, if that's okay. It might be kind of lengthy, maybe about a minute or two.
A minute I can handle. Go ahead, Frank.
Thank you, sir. I think if we want to talk about the apocalypse and the end, that maybe we need to go to the beginning and why things began even. And I have a particular theory that, I do believe in God and Jesus Christ and what he did. If there is a God and he was alone, then he created a man in his own image. And then he saw that it was not good that that man was alone, which is mirror image of him already, because he was alone. Now he creates Adam, he's alone. So he creates Eve. And in the end, he creates for himself a bride. And if we are the bride of Christ, if there is a rapture, and which I don't think that it occurs as they have taught us in our generation, it could be some other way, but the end result is that he creates a bride for himself for eternity, as we would go in spirit, that we have been created in the flesh and have a consciousness and is somehow transformed into eternal beings. And now he has someone to be with forever. It's a very simple concept to me, and it's all of life and all of Earth's creation is a love story. God created us to become like him so that he would have someone to love forever, because he cannot die. And so if we kind of focus on that and realize that, you know, there's an answer. There will be those of us who have a hope, and no matter what happens on this earth, no matter what disasters, we're going to be okay if we trust in him, that in our creator.
Well, Frank, let me tell you, I like that attitude that we're going to be okay, and I think we have to have that attitude, Matthew, to move forward, don't you?
I think we absolutely do, and I think it's a wonderful attitude, and it's actually an attitude I think that we argue from a less biblical and more secular perspective that we need to have as we move forward, that we will be okay. I think the challenge with apocalyptic thinking quite often, and I don't think the caller is alluding to this at all, But what the challenge happens when we start to think that some of us will be okay and others won't. And that's what creates a lot of dissension and a lot of conflict. And also, I think what causes many people to abdicate our duty to biblical creation as stewards of it.
No doubt. Let's go to Clint, Anchorage, Alaska. Take it away, Clint. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call, and I want to thank you also for being on 4th of July.
Oh, that's okay. You know, you know my deal. If I'm working on a holiday, we'll be there.
Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome.
And Matthew, I'd like to ask you about the seven seals.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, we do have a phantom or a some kind of disease come out. Is that another possibility?
In terms of the seven seals coming true?
Yeah.
Like a pandemic, maybe?
Yeah, a pandemic.
Yeah. Well, we write about pandemics quite a bit in the book. And, you know, the problem with pandemics that we argue is, you know, there's a reason when people raise the specter of a global pandemic that they have to reach back 100 years to the Spanish flu, or even 500 and 600 years to the Black Death. And that's that. The reason is global pandemics are quite rare from a historical perspective. It's not to say that they're not possibilities, but they don't happen quite often. And I think in part that's because when you look at what makes a virus mutate into something that can kill a large amount of people, it really is equivalent of the evolutionary equivalent of winning a Powerball ticket. It requires so many different factors and hoops for a virus to jump through to get to the point where it could spread in such a way that it would devastate humanity or wipe out humanity. I don't think it's that large of a threat. That said, when you look at the history of the Black Death, what you find is that it certainly devastated and killed up to a third of the European population, and that resulted in not the end of the world, but actually the transformation of the world. In a sense, it led to the Renaissance because it created this upheaval and this change in the relation between capital and land and labor that led to the rise of an early European middle class and the Renaissance, and then eventually the Enlightenment.
Well, that is true. Truly, the entire situation. When you look at the planet, when you look at pandemics, and you look at what the World Health Organization, Matthew, does, they try to scare the living daylights out of us.
They absolutely do. They absolutely do. And, you know, even the Spanish flu, when we think about it, and, you know, it killed millions of people, but the majority of people who were killed and who died as a result of the Spanish flu, there were two things that happened. One is it was a unique time in world history where you had millions upon millions of young men and women, some women as well, living in close quarters in barracks around the world as the First World War came to an end. So you had a really unique situation in terms of how humans were living at that moment that would be difficult to reproduce if, you know, the same virus were to come along today. And also many of those people who did die died of secondary infections, and many of those secondary infections wouldn't happen today because of, you know, advances in sterility and medical practices in hospitals. So it's not to say that a pandemic couldn't wipe out a good portion of a population, and it's not to say that it's not an absolute human tragedy when disease does strike, you know, whether it's an epidemic or a pandemic.
Well, they may do it to all of us. We're going to come back. We're going to take final phone calls with you, Matthew, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll be talking with Chris Duane about preserving freedom. Get ready for this blockbuster. And when we come back in a moment with Matthew Barrett Gross, The Last Myth, we'll take final phone calls with him on Coast to Coast AM. Matthew, as an expert in current events, and as we now say, the apocalypse here with The Last Myth, what do you see as some of the most pressing issues that could make the apocalypse occur here?
Well, I think, you know, if we think of the apocalypse rather than as a moment, but as a trend, as a fundamental change in how we live in the world, I would say, from my perspective, energy and peak oil are is probably one of the biggest challenges we face, for the simple reason that the easy access to cheap and affordable oil has not only fueled the American way of life and many of the luxuries that we enjoyed, but it really Thank you. I cannot speak apparently after 12:35. But you know, it really
try to keep going like me, Matthew. I can't stop.
But it really forms the basis of our industrial way of life, and it really enables us to feed our population and the global population, and to maintain these very long 1,000-mile supply chains that allow us to get iceberg lettuce from California, you know, before it rots. And
even though it might have Listeria on it,
even though it may have that is a problem. Always wash, always rinse your fruits and vegetables. But you know, I would think that energy is probably and climate are two of our biggest predicaments. But are they apocalyptic? Will they send us back to the Stone Age? No, but they will require us to reimagine not just how we look at the world, but how we conduct our business.
They could change our way of living.
They absolutely could. But is that apocalyptic? Well, you know, people lived for hundreds of thousands of years, you know, tens of thousands of years prior to the use of oil as a primary fuel. And they lived perfectly happy and meaningful lives. Now, they might not have been able to text one another on their iPhones, but they were, you know, quite happy. And
can't do Facebook and find out where your friends are every moment.
Exactly. And, you know, these are challenges that science and technology may find ways out of. But, you know, I think without a doubt, we're already seeing that. And the interesting thing is, when you think about peak oil, for example, and it's often portrayed in apocalyptic terms, but what we've found now, having lived for almost 4 years with gas well above $3 per gallon, with a blip or two there when we had massive deflation in 2008 and early 2009, people adapt. People adapt quite well. We see that in people buying smaller cars, and people will make changes mm-hmm. in response to things. And some of the things that we cling to and think, well, I have a right to my big SUV. Some people still believe that, and that's fine if you drive one. I drive a 4Runner myself. But for most of us, we sort of let those things go, and we accept that things are different. And, well, I can keep my SUV, or I could get a smaller car and have an extra $20-$40 a week to go to dinner or go to a movie.
Good point. Let's go to the phones. Carl is on Orlando, Florida. Good morning, Carl. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, George. Matthew, it's very nice to meet you guys on the phone.
Super.
Thank you for taking my call also. And your site, your show's been so insightful lately. It's just scary with that poor man and the NASCAR accident and the other aspects. I'm very insightful to many different things for some reason. And God's given me a lot of insight on different aspects. But one of the things that I'm really annoyed about is that there's no like setup aspect for anybody who's very, very poor to have electricity immediately in our country.
How so? Explain.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Explain what you mean.
Oh, I mean, on an emergency basis, like if we have a hurricane or a tornado or something and everybody's completely devastated, and there's nothing really there to like pick up the pieces. We have
when the grid goes, that's like, it. You know,
Salvation Army and stuff like that that comes in. But I'm talking about an emergency grid aspect where, you know, like a generator or something like that, where everybody could get power.
Well, what do you think, Matthew? Should everybody go buy a generator for their house and just stand by?
Well, you know,
not everybody can afford one of them.
Not everybody can afford one, indeed, and much of what we talk about in terms of prepping, I think Carl brings up, a good point, is a luxury that many people can't afford. Certainly people living paycheck to paycheck and who burn through their paycheck feeding their family on a given week can't necessarily stockpile a month or two of food with very much ease. You know, but I think what it points to is there is a fundamental sort of disconnect between we are very as American people, we're very individualistic, and we very much believe in standing up our own 2 feet, and that's great. But I think that the real strength and the real way to prepare for calamities is through community organization, and people can work together with their neighbors, with their family and friends, to really create something when it comes to disaster preparedness that doesn't have to be something that every person has a generator. In fact, you don't need 7 generators on a block necessarily, you know, for a short-term crisis. One or two, or even a community generator could make the difference. But I actually think we're stronger when we do that. And we do this all the time in our neighborhoods and communities. You know, we borrow the friend's lawnmower or weed whacker when we need it, and they come over and borrow a power saw. But when it comes to preparation, there's kind of this every man for himself mentality that actually is a weakness, I believe, in much of the prepping movement.
Let's go to Keith, Grand Junction, Colorado, first-time caller. Keith, you're on with us. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Put on your tinfoil hats because we're going down the conspiracy theory rabbit hole.
Here we go.
Well, I've been watching the news for decades now, and it seems to me that this whole concept of an apocalypse, this impending apocalypse, is really just a mask for global governance, world government, and it's all getting people to accept the chaos that they're seeing and the economic crises that are arising around the world, which are really just being manipulated as being, oh, it's the apocalypse, so okay, I can accept it. This is divine.
It's supposed to happen, right?
Yeah, it's supposed to happen. So therefore, I'm going to give up my freedoms to a centrally planned economy that takes away my liberty, that takes away my ability to do whatever I choose to want. Because when I see the United Nations International Panel on Climate Change and tell Africa they cannot grow agriculture, period, because the cattle are going to fart methane and that's going to cause global warming. And they can't raise grain because that's going to cause global warming. What does that create? It creates a false scarcity in agriculture. When you have people talk about peak oil and they say that there's a finite amount of oil, we're going to run out of it in 20 years, that creates a false scarcity and it raises the price of oil.
That's right.
When you have fiat currencies, this massive, massive amount of currency that just starts, this money supply that massively increases, it increases the cost of everything. That's a false scarcity.
Well, Keith, you are right on, but what I want you to do is pay very close attention next hour when we talk about that, preserving our freedom, which is right down exactly what you're talking about. But Matthew, as we talked about, fear creates this feeling of apocalypse, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, and it does create a sense of, well, how do we assuage this fear? And I think Keith is exactly right. In many cases, not all, but in many cases, that creates an avenue and a conduit for people in power to convince people to give up their liberties and to give up their rights in the name of security. And I think one of the reasons we wrote the book and one of the things we argue in the book is, if we as individuals are able to look at these fears with a bit more rationality and a bit more research on our own in terms of, well, what is the actual evidence for this, not just what is some government official or some pundit telling me about what's likely to happen, how likely is this to happen? And I think it's worth asking, anytime you read anything in the news, is who benefits and where is this coming from?
Absolutely.
Always coming, having worked in politics, everything comes from somewhere, right? Somebody's always spinning and pitching a story. But, you know, and so that's the danger. And I think we saw that written very large in the last decade following the attacks of 9/11 and some of what I see as government overreach with our fear of terrorism.
That hasn't stopped either.
That hasn't stopped. And in fact, there's a figure that we cite in the last myth, and I don't have it directly in front of me, but you know, during the last decade, a person was far more likely by a factor of 3 or 4 to die from falling off a ladder than from, you know, being killed by a terrorist attack. And yet we didn't see this, you know, massive government effort to get rid of ladders. Why? Because there's no power in getting rid of ladders, but there is power in terms of getting rid of people's rights or being able to snoop emails or listen in on phone calls. And power is a force in and of itself. It's something once people have, they will, and once governments have, they will seek more of it. And it's not always a conspiracy. I think that's just a natural way of the universe and of the way humans work.
Let's go to Scott Clearwater, Florida. Scott, you're on with Matthew Gross. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, I'd just like to say happy birthday to America. This might be your last. And the Bible talks about in the last days there would be scoffers like yourselves, willingly ignorant. I guess you could say modern-day vernacular, don't confuse me with the facts.
What do you mean by scoffers, Scott?
Well, people that are scoffing at Bible prophecy, the last myth, and blaming Christians because they've read Hal Lindsey's Late Great Planet Earth or something, and somehow we've generated a fear that's in the world. But actually, I was watching earlier today, yesterday, Fox News and also CNN. They said the Pentagon is sending more warships into the Persian Gulf, and at the same time, Iran is firing off Shahab, I guess, 3 missiles.
Missiles, yep, they sure are.
Now, the God knows in the Bible, he's pointed out Bible prophecy. He knows the end from the beginning. And he's talked about a latter-day war where Israel's attacked by Iran, which is, ancient Persia. It's attacked by Libya and Ethiopia. And why are all these ships in the Persian Gulf in 2012, July 4th? It's because there's going to be a big war.
Well, they're getting ready for it. There's no doubt about that.
It's going to be attacked. And see, you're scoffers.
No, we're not.
You're not?
No. What show are you listening to?
I'm listening to the show I've always listened to.
Okay. I mean, who's scoffing at that? We've talked about biblical prophecy for years here.
Yeah, but you don't believe it's going to be true.
Whoa. You don't want to, Scott. You have no idea what I believe because I've never told you what I believe.
Of course I know what you believe. You have a lot of new age
program. Because a guest comes on the show, does that mean that I or you or anybody else particularly believes in what they have to say?
Of course, because I hear you're agreeing with them.
No. See, that's you are so off base, and that's one of the problems I think of America today is people can't talk about their specific views without somebody else attacking them like you. Now, your views are your views, and you're entitled to that. Matthew's views are his views, and he's entitled to that. Matthew, what else can I say?
Well, I think that's exactly right, and I think, the one thing I would encourage Scott to do is to read The Last Myth, because we've actually had some quite positive responses from very religious people, from evangelical Christians, from I live in Utah, and from Mormon readers, who found the history contained within it of biblical prophecy and how we arrived here to be enlightening. And I don't think there's anything within the book that challenges, in fact, we quite deliberately say, there's very little you can do when talking about the apocalypse as a central tenet of Christian theology, and it is, and that's not something that we're seeking to address. What we're seeking to address in the book is how this idea of the apocalypse and the end of the world influences people who might not be religious like Scott.
Well, you know what, in this program, I've had Hal Lindsey on the program before, and he's been a great guest. This program succeeds by different views. Whether I happen to believe, by the way, in the abiotic oil theory. I believe this planet has an abundance of oil. We don't necessarily have to be burning it all the time, but I believe that's what the planet is. But that doesn't make me attack somebody else's views who believes in the peak oil theory.
Absolutely. And I think, that's absolutely critical, because when we do think about the apocalyptic thinking and the apocalyptic storyline, it's very often used as an us versus them or a self versus the other. And moving beyond that, we argue within the book is actually critical for a functioning democracy, and that a functioning democracy requires differing viewpoints and people to be able to understand their different viewpoints and come to a consensus. The storyline of the apocalypse believes that those who don't believe will be punished and the believers will be saved. That storyline doesn't work very well in a democracy.
You know, I've talked about climate change. And again, my belief that the Earth has a cycle. And yes, the planet's warming up. Is man contributing to it? Doesn't really matter today because the planet was going to do this anyway. It did it 100,000 years ago. It did it 1 million years ago. But I've had guests on who have talked about climate change based on man. And you know what? That's their view, and they're entitled to it.
Well, and exactly. And whether climate change is caused by man or not, one of the things I think that's important is to remember is our civilization grew within the last 12,000 years in a very stable climate that is now changing. And whether we're causing it or some other force is causing it, longer cycles that carry through epochs, that's still something that we will have to address and adapt to as a civilization.
Matthew, I've had witches on the show. I've had occultists. I've had vampires on the program. Doesn't mean I go out and bite the first person I know.
Can I tell you a funny story about witches?
Yeah.
This is just a quick aside. From the
Real
Dean
one.
Campaign, if people remember, the Dean campaign used meetup.com to kind of organize people around the country. And we were the first people to do it. And we were constantly watching the numbers and seeing, oh, we've got 500 people on Dean meetup and 1,000 people and 2,000 people. And we were so excited when we passed the biggest group on meetup, which was the witches.
Some witches I've known are pretty darn nice people. Tulsa, Oklahoma, we go. Derek, let's see if we squeeze you in here, Derek. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, George.
Hi.
Hey, I called in yesterday on the first time caller line. I was very nervous. But anyway, yeah, you're talking about the end times and with Revelations, right?
Yep.
Okay. It's my belief, and I've been atheist since I was 14. I grew up Christian. Recently, starting to read some of this Bible scripture is starting to make me believe in a higher being again. Particularly what I wanted to address this time was there's a verse that says, those for thou art rich, but those who claim to be Jews but are not Jews are of the synagogue of Satan. It is my belief that just in a nutshell, that the government is ran by Satan worshiping.
Well, you may be right. The government has some strange people in office, no doubt. That's the end of our first part of our program. Up next, we talk about preserving freedom on Coast to Coast AM. Matthew, thank you for your work, The Last Myth, you wrote with Mel Giles. And I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.